You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
I'm Brad Jackson.
And this is the Cigar Nerds Dragon Con Hangover episode, where we kind of wrap up our adventures at Dragon Con.
And, yeah, Dragon Con, man. A great time, but so much prep goes into con, and then it
so much
definitely
goes on at
takes
con.
A week or so to recuperate after Dragon Con.
Yes, post-con blues is definitely a thing. And speaking of dragons, what are we smoking this week, Brad?
So this week we've got the archetype, Strange Passage, kind of fitting, because walking into Dragon Con is like a strange passage. this sports a Ecuadorian Habano wrapper with, a Honduran Corojo binder with a multi-country blend and a full-bodied taste.
Yeah, they on their website, to which this is made by Ventura Cigars, they describe it as a multi-dimensional, full-bodied flavor profile that transforms throughout the smoking experience from freshly roasted coffee and aged wood to an earthy fruit and spice finish.
Much like Dragon Con itself, because yeah. The con you get mid-afternoon is not the con you're going to get at 10 till, 6 a.m.
Yeah, and also, the con you get Thursday, Friday is not the con you get on Saturday after people have been going hard for, 3 days.
Absolutely not. So,
yeah, but the one thing that kept us going through Dragon Con, StrikeForceEnergy.com. You need a little boost to get you through your strange passage. Call up StrikeForceEnergy.com. Use your promo code CigarNerds for 20% off your order. I got the 750 milliliter bottle where you can just, pump it. I filled up a flask full of that and just kept, topping off my drinks with that all weekend. It kept me caffeinated, kept me alive. And so with that, and also we picked this cigar because the label has a cool dragon circling the earth. So it was very fitting with the whole Dragon Con theme.
Absolutely. So, this cigar here, starting out, it's spicy, and I would say, spicy and roasted, I think, are the two flavors I'm picking up the most just getting into this cigar.
Very good construction, too, from just initial looks. But it's not super powerful to start, but there's a lot of flavor in this. And like I said, it's a good post-con wake-up cigar.
Oh, yeah. It's just crazy. I mean, the more I get into this thing, it's all of the flavors coming together. I mean, we just got finished with a powerhouse of a cigar. So, I was a little bit iffy on...
if we got something too mild, it might drown it out.
But, I'm getting everything that they described. And, usually that's very subjective to a particular person's palate. But this go-round, I don't think they could have picked a better description. I'm picking up on all of the flavors, and it's just awesome. One of the things is the draw on this cigar is so very smooth.
It is literally
taking in a breath of air.
Like I said, it's very easy to drag on, and it's producing some just thick clouds of smoke.
So, I'm really curious to see what the rest of this cigar holds. So we will keep you folks updated as we continue to smoke, but stick around because it's the Dragon Con wrap-up.
Yeah. Come home with a new dark night. My mother says, hey, you're going out of this ride. Oh, mother dear, I love my limited runs. And nerds, they want to have fun. Oh, nerds just want to have fun. I'm reading in the middle of the night. My father says, when you're moving, last Dragon Con. We actually did it all again.
It's funny, you know? I don't know. This has, what, been 4 or 5 years in succession? I mean, you know, we have both been longtime Dragon Con goers. I probably took a 4 or 5 year hiatus just due to, you know, lifestyle changes and whatnot. But, you know, I've found my way back to, you know, the land of every fandom imaginable. You know, I think for this Dragon Con, I mean, this is probably been the most diverse, you know, as far as the cosplays and, you know, just the meshing of overall fandoms. Don't get me wrong, Dragon Con has always kind of been a culture of, you know, whatever your geekdom is kind of goes. But, you know, I think this year, you know, we always talk about what we think is going to be the most popular cosplay, you know, on the male side, on the female side. And it was actually kind of difficult to decide what cosplay
was. Last year
it was
quite easy. It was like, all right, they're either Rick, Pickle Rick, or the ladies are all Harley Quinn this year. But yeah, there was definitely more of a blend, I think, this year. There wasn't anything, you know, really that stood way out. And like I said, I think this is like our third year being pressed, fourth year going as a podcast. But yeah, fuck, I've been going for forever. It never gets old. It's still, you know, new Dragon Con every year.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, we've talked about it on previous episodes, but you know, it's weird, the popular thing being nerdy. I don't ever remember ever, you know, having a sense of, you know, what I'm doing was, you know, related somehow to popularity. But yeah, I It's weird, man.
Oh, so, I mean, you already brought it up, so let's jump in there as our first talking point, the cosplay. Could you, like, now that we've, you know, had a couple days to sit and think back, pick up a costume of the con? The one thing, like, you know, I'll go ahead and throw myself in, but there was definitely a lot of, and this probably entirely has to do with the fact that there was a Wakanda welcomes you party the first night, or first officially on Friday night. I did see a lot of Black Panthers, and also the name of it slipping my mind, but the guards women. I saw a lot of badass Wakandan guard women and a lot of different versions of Black Panther. I even saw several like King T'Challa's in his, like, you know, street clothes and stuff with like just the Black Panther necklace and whatnot. So, I mean, but it wasn't so many that it would like stood out like that is definitely my, you know, costume of the con. But it was a definitely a nice blend of, you know, Black Panther related products this year.
Absolutely. And you know, it was, I mean talking about Dragon Con as a melting pot, I mean, you know, it was really cool to, you know, see a lot more, you know, of different cultures at Dragon Con. Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's always been there. But, you know, this year, just the melting pot, you know, grew. And, you know, that was very, you know, refreshing in my opinion. And, you know, anytime you can get a group of, you know, people from all different walks of life, you know, that's I think what, you know, a lot of folks outside of Dragon Con that may have never experienced don't quite realize is, I mean, you get doctors, lawyers, folks with PhDs, you get, you know, just people with all walks of life, you know, very similarly to, you know, when you sit down at a brick and mortar cigar shop. I mean, you know, when everybody's got that one thing in common, I'm celebrating my geekdom, whatever it is, and there's an enthusiasm to share it. And you know, in a time where you see so much negativity, you know, regarding politics or, you know, religious affiliations and everything, it's awesome to see all of that go aside. And, you know, this year, I think probably, you know, one of the biggest cosplay kind of making non-nerd circles is the, you know, person that, you know, is essentially poking fun at the lady that tried to call the cops on, you know, some black folks having a barbecue, you know, minding their own business. And just because there was a gathering of black folks, she took it upon herself to be like, no, they got to be doing something shady or whatever. So there was actually a cosplayer that got invited to, you know, some of the Wakanda photo shoots just to make fun of some of that. And, you know, to be able to make light of, you know, some insensitive situations and, you know, people to be able to see the humor in it. Like, I've seen folks outside of the con community be like, you know, that's offensive and everything. No, it's not. It's, you know, poking fun at the issues and making light of them and, you know, saying, hey, you know, either we can focus on the negative or we take a negative and turn it into the positive and all come together to bash out the assholes.
Yeah. I mean, that's the way to do it. I mean, everybody gets their, you know, despite us all having different backgrounds and definitely different, you know, political beliefs and religious beliefs. I mean, even the crazy religious protesters that are there every year, I didn't even see them as much this year, I don't think. I mean, I know they were there during the parade because I could hear them out our hotel window with their freaking bullhorn. But other than that, I didn't really run into any of them on the streets while we were roaming around. I ran into more, like, counter, like, Deadpools making fun of the protesters than I did the actual protesters this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, you know, with this thing called freedom of speech, I mean, it goes both ways. You know, unfortunately, you know, folks are going to say things that you may not like or disagree with, but how you choose to handle the situation, you know, I mean, you can either, you know, make light of it or you can get, you know, offended and triggered and, you know, make a bigger ass out of yourself than, you know, the other asses. But
And I do love some of the obscure original costumes. Like, I didn't see this myself, but I was talking to one of our friends who was there, and there was a Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. maid walking around with a dustbuster and, like, a pan, like, you know, going up to the Thanos and saying they were here to clean up their mess and was, like, you know, pretending to sweep up leftover Avengers.
Yeah, I saw a funny thing. So, you know, I went to pick up the new Spider-Man game, obviously pretty popular. Opened up the case and was rather disappointed.
Somebody just fill it with ash.
Just a pile of dust. Not original at all, but, you know, still hilariously funny. At 3 o'clock in the morning as I'm reading and I'm like, my gamer friends will get a kick out of it. That was kind of the other thing is, you know, there was kind of a dominance of a lot of Overwatch, a lot of Fortnite, you know, a lot of the, you know, big video game cosplays, you know, making a lot of appearances go round.
I'm a gamer. I'm definitely an old school gamer. I don't get into the, especially because I live where I have crappy internet now, so I don't really get into the online gaming as much. You know, my old saying at Dragon Con is, if I don't recognize the costume, it's probably anime. This year, it's like, if I don't recognize it, it's probably PUBG or Overwatch or one of the popular games now. Because I've seen enough of that stuff, like, floating around the internet that I'm like, I know that. What's that from? But I have no idea what it is.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, that
was... I did see the PUBG guy walking around with the frying pan as a weapon, too. It was... I was like, I saw a bunch of those.
Was it peace bonded?
They should have.
Sir, I mean, I'm going to need to put a zip tie around
me. The thing is, when we were going through the vendors hall, there was a LARPing dealer who was selling the foam weaponry for, like, you know, LARP fighting, and they had a foam frying pan if you wanted to LARP like that and whack people with your foam frying pan. The other probably standout costume that there was a lot of this year is the damn inflatable T-Rexes. T-Rexes have started cosplaying themselves. There was, like, so many different versions of the T-Rex this year.
They never get old. I mean, you know, and the fact that...
I kind of want one now.
the makeup of, you know, kind of the host hotels, right? I mean, the Hilton just went all out and did, you know, a rendition of Jurassic Park called Hilton Park. And
yeah, they even,
you know,
had Jurassic Park-themed drinks in the Hilton... The Hilton's kind of the new party spot, too. That used to be the old people's hotel,
you know,
where it was just the gamers and game stuff, and it was all, it was kind of quiet. That's where we always snuck off to have a smoke. But now there's, like, 24-hour DJs in the lobby and out back on the one of the decks. I mean, and, like, I saw, because we didn't show up till Thursday, but now apparently Wednesday is the new Thursday. There was, like, a full-on T-Rex party going on in the lobby Wednesday night that I was seeing some of my friends posting videos from.
And, you know, so we got the official numbers, you know. Last year's numbers, or the year before last, I should say, now that con is over, sadly. you know, I think they set a new attendance record of like 85,000. This year's numbers, you know, were just a tad off at 80,000.
But still a good number of people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think some of the other hotels really embracing con is helping, you know, spread the con out a little bit. Like, yeah, you know, 5,000 people isn't a huge difference when you're talking, you know, 70 or 80,000 plus folks, right? That's still a ton of bodies. But, you know, even going through the Marriott prime time Saturday night, like, yes, it was crowded, but you could move.
Yeah.
And like, I could see the floor in areas.
Seeing the official numbers kind of surprised me because it felt like it was a lot lower this year just because everything was so much more, I guess, people-wise spread out. Because, like I said, you know, it's kind of been a constant increase. Like I said, it was a couple years ago, it was 70, 75, 85 last year. And then this year didn't quite make a new record.
But I think
it felt like a lot less people just because I guess we're so more spread out. Because I didn't realize it was that close to last year. Because last year seemed a lot more crowded than this year did.
And I think last year, what? There were two major football games going on. There was some other huge event going. And, you know, folks will be like, oh, the sports people aren't attending Dragon Con. I know sports people that are nerds, too, that, you know, would absolutely embrace both worlds. So the fact that you had so many other events also sharing the same hotels, like, you know, the numbers aren't all of that off. I mean, you know, when you talk about, you know, folks transient from,
they're getting stuck in the habit trails. Like, we never, like, really, I mean, the habit trails were usually steady, but they weren't like we've come to a dead stop like we have in some years.
So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess the only kind of shock, you know, to me is just, you know, the Westin has absolutely become kind of the tucked away quiet place, I guess, you know? I mean, there's...
Yeah, because that's mainly, like, a lot of the gaming track panels were over there, and then a lot of the, I was like, urban fantasy and which I've never really, because I've gotten into prepping a little bit, you know, I've been building a bailout bag, but you know, the Apocalypse Rising track, just from looking at some of the panels they're having, we end up going to one on like tactical, like, you know, medicine and stuff. But yeah, they had a lot of cool like survivalist panels and stuff over there. So I may have to venture over more that area next year. But
yeah, and I mean, it was great just being able to get in a line with like 25 or 30 folks and
not being around the block.
Yeah, but I mean. And which I guess we didn't hit any of the super major celebrity panels, but line management this year. I mean, the longest line we were in was for the mixology panel.
Yeah. Like, everyone heard booze and got in line.
Yeah. But I mean, it seemed like, you know, as far as getting folks in and out in an orderly fashion, you know, seemed to flow so much better. So, you know, huge props to, you know, the security team for, you know, just herding us like cattle and getting us from one place to another.
Yeah, because even down in the, you know, the Hyatt basement with the big Centennial ballrooms, usually those lines are kind of a cluster because I know last year they moved a lot of them outside and then didn't really tell anybody that they were lining up outside, and there was like mass confusion. I guess everyone got the memo this year, so I never saw like just a mass of confused people down there in that entryway space trying to figure out where to go. It looked like everything, you know, lined up properly and flowed pretty well.
So, I mean, you know, the con is ever evolving and changing. And, you know, it looks like maybe for the better, you know. I mean, I see a lot of folks, you know, still saying, no, we need to do, like, you know, San Diego Comic-Con and start capping, you know, badge sales and everything. And I think that kind of kills the spirit of the con.
Yeah.
I mean, I did hear that they ran out of badges on Thursday. But, you know, people were like, no, they capped. No, they just ran out of badges. And they will adjust for, you know, a bigger Thursday presence for next year.
Yeah, because now that there's actual programming on Thursday, it's no longer just the show up, check in your room, and get your badges day. It's like, oh, there's actual panels and parties and shit going on that first night. Because that was, I think that was the night of the Wakanda party too. It was like, Thursday used to be just the wrestling was pretty much the only official event, but now there's like, parties and actual stuff going on Thursday night. So now freaking Wednesday's the show up and just party day before things start.
Yeah.
Cause I was like, some of my friends that showed up early was like posting pictures and videos and I'm like, shit, it's already rocking. We're not even there yet.
good times to be had all around. I don't know. The joke has always been, Thursday is the new Friday. Well, Wednesday is the new Thursday.
Yeah.
It's so official.
Do you have a choice of what you think the costume of the con was?
Man, that is so difficult. Just and what I saw female costume wise, probably Wonder Woman.
There's definitely a lot of Wonder Woman this year. I mean, and different versions too.
Yeah,
the pinup. 50s.
I mean, I saw the comic version. I saw the more modern versions.
The bomber jacket, ladies of DC, like the bombshell DC girls were cool. Cause I saw like the 50s pinup, Rosie the Riveter, Wonder Woman, and the Harley Quinn with the bomber jacket on. I mean, it was some pretty cool stuff. So staying on cosplay. What's some of your highlights you saw of particular favorite costumes?
All right, so pretty obscure, but maybe it's just because I enjoy annoying my friends and my girlfriend, but I can't help but introduce folks to Old Greg that don't know Old Greg. And if you are unfamiliar with who Old Greg is, go on YouTube and just type in Old Greg.
It's from the Mighty Boosh, and it's like weird, obscure British comedy.
Yes.
But we found an Old Greg.
Yes, we did find Old Greg. And, part of Old Greg is he really enjoys his Baileys. And, he invites somebody down, to visit and offers them some Baileys in a shoe. And Old Greg at Dragon Con offered us a sanitary version of Old Bailey's in a shoe. Instead of pouring it directly into the shoe,
he put
one of the paper cups
in the shoe
and poured some Bailey's, so we did get to have Bailey's in a shoe.
he told us he didn't bring his watercolors though, but looking on Facebook, I did see there was another Old Greg who even had the light underneath the skirt, which I believe was a friend of mine, Chad. But yeah, it was like, because I think Saturday night is the night we usually like start getting a little drunk and going out and seeing what we can. And like, that was the one where like, doing something, we're like, oh yeah, that's cool. But we're like, oh shit, Old Greg. And that was the one that got us like super excited. Cause we're like, we did not think we would
see
full on Old Greg.
There is one cosplay that I saw that, was from Deadpool 2, where he has the little baby legs and the guy had, the couch and, the little unicorn and, I saw that and I was like, ha, that's really freaking off. And apparently that has gone viral, so much so that, a couple of the producers or executive producers from Deadpool 2 have now started to tweet that guy's cosplay.
Yeah, because he had, not only did he have the like burned up like matte, like face makeup on, he had his legs like, black stuff, so you can see his leg, and it had built an actual couch. It was carrying around the couch. It was amazing. I was like, holy shit, that's a level of cosplay I wasn't expecting.
Probably one of the most simplistic cosplays that, was just a throwback to my childhood was somebody had a pink RC Corvette with a
yes,
a stuffed gizmo and,
yes,
was driving around one of the hotel lobbies. And,
yeah, that just brought out the child and everyone, because yes, everyone's running up, oh my God, can I get a photo with that?
So simple, but, like you said, just one of those that throws you back to your childhood that you're just like, that's awesome. one of the... another one that really stood out was Ripley.
Saw that at the Hyatt bar. It was Ripley in the like big robotic loader thing from Aliens.
And I mean, that loader was huge. Probably 7.5 feet tall.
Yeah,
I mean, and probably
giant,
a good 3 feet wide. It was not a little thing, and it was freaking awesome.
I don't know how she got it down there. Like
well, I think it disassembled. I caught a comment thread going on, and you know, she had a few friends help her, but it disassembled in several different sections. So
yeah, because that's definitely one it wasn't fitting in an elevator. Oh yeah, that one was cool, and I know I forgot what it was, but at one point we were just kind of discussing costumes we've not seen, and I was like, I haven't seen any Spaceballs yet. And that night we're out roaming around, sure enough, saw two Spaceballs, and they were the Spaceballs who had their uniforms stolen. So they're in the boxer shorts and tank tops with their guns and their helmets running around, and they were like, holy shit, the Spaceballs, I had to get a picture with them. And then I asked them, like, have y'all found anything yet? And they're like, we ain't found shit. And I'm like, yes, that's the proper answer. And the Super Troopers costumes. I saw like go to our website. I'll post all our Dragon Con photos to the events section of our photo
album.
We have
really got it. You know, it's so crazy. Like, I'm the type of person that if I go to a concert or something, I don't want to vicariously experience it looking through the lens of my cell phone or my camera. So I have got to get much better at taking more photos, because I'm like, I want to experience it firsthand without necessarily looking at it through a lens. And
yeah, and I always try to get a couple just to throw up on our Instagram and Facebook pages. But yeah, and I'll post everything I have to our website. Go there and check out our pictures when this episode goes up. But there was a guy dressed as Mac from the first Super Troopers movie when he's at the gun range with the bulletproof cup. So this guy was just wearing a bulletproof cup and like range headphones and like pretty much a man thong on, because we got stuck on an elevator with him later. But we saw that. And then I wish I could have got a photo out, but we only passed him in one of the habit trails, so I couldn't stop. But it was Scout Troopers dressed up as Super Troopers. So they had the Scout Trooper armor on with like the Vermont State Trooper outfits and hats, and even had like little mustaches on their helmets. It was amazing.
And you know, speaking of, I think probably one of my favorite mashups was somebody had a Fett helmet with a sign that said "Damn it, Barry," and you know, it encompassed like three different fandoms.
I was wondering, he's like wearing like a Superman outfit and like the Fett helmet. I don't know, yeah, but it was like a couple different things.
It's so it's like, you know, it basically crossed multiple universes. So Barry seriously fucked up.
and you know, we're always fans of the steampunk aesthetic. There was a few good steampunk outfits I saw, but and you know, whatever, Dave Lee of Hat and Crush Steampunk was there with some stuff, and he had some cool. But steampunk Colonel Sanders was the one that was like, oh my god, and we were like on the upper smoking deck, and we saw him like walking through, so we couldn't run up and get a photo. But he was in like a full like white Victorian suit with a top hat that looked like a KFC bucket with a chicken on top, and this like flamethrower roaster arm, and like a bandolier of the 11 herbs and spices and little shakers and all kind of cooking utensils hanging off his utility belt. It was freaking awesome.
I did see somebody dressed up as a giant rubber chicken, and I'm like, man, they should definitely be like cruising the con together.
Yeah. That, or there needed to be like him fighting a Peter Griffin. It's like the chicken and Peter Griffin fighting.
That would be awesome.
And I did see a good pimp Vader. Like Krunk Vader was rocking out at one point. Yeah, there's just, yeah, I mean, the level of the costume, I mean, there's a couple good Thanoses this year that were, like, pretty big, and there was even, that's one thing, too, is Dragon Con, not only is it for the drunken, carousing adults like ourselves, but, you know, especially during the daylight hours, it's a family-friendly con, too, and it was kind of cool seeing some of the family group costumes. Like, I remember seeing one where there was a mom dressed as Bride of Chucky, and her little kid was dressed as Chucky, and that kid was legit about Chucky height too, so it was extra creepy. And I'm like, you're either a good parent or you're a bad parent for letting your kid watch that movie.
Or the kid has never seen the movie and just has like, no idea what I want to be scary.
Oh, let me see. What are those other?
I saw the Brady Bunch.
Yeah.
Let's see. I did see a family of Pennywise, which was interesting. Dude, some of the Pennywise costumes were... Yeah. In fact, I think there was a professional special effects group at Dragon Con doing some of the Pennywise cosplays.
Yeah, because I passed one of the Pennywise on the escalator, I mean, dude, and that dude was creepy as shit. And walk around with like a bunch of balloons, too.
It almost, you know, looked Hollywood quality. I mean, not almost, it did. I was like, holy shit. Like,
there was a couple of hot lady Pennywises, too, which I'm like, I don't know if I'm aroused or scared, because... Scared stiff.
God.
Oh. And then the impromptu S&M show at the the pool that night.
Hey, you know, whatever. I mean, you know, there for a long time. I mean, Dragon Con had a lot of the, you know, more...
Yeah, there was always a Fet Life panel.
18-plus, you know, fetish panels and stuff. But I guess, you know, several years ago, they kind of moved away from that. But, I mean, hey, whatever. I'm, you know, it's there. Celebrate it, you know? I mean, who the hell am I to judge?
Oh, and I didn't make it. It was one of the ones I wanted to make it to, but we never did, was the some of the Smallville panels. I heard Tom Welling and Michael Rosenbaum were awesome.
I mean, you even had, you know, Peter Capaldi, you know, folks familiar with Doctor Who, you know. I think he showed up to, you know, several of the parties and...
Yeah, apparently it was his first Dragon Con, too, and he was having a blast. Someone was telling me that they were at, like, a Planets of the Ape panel, and he just came, like, running in, like, had no one. He's like, no one told me there was a Planets of the Ape panel. I mean, he was a fan, too. He wanted to come in and see the panels. So it's kind of... that's the one thing I like about Dragon Con is you know, see the celebrities just wandering around at times, and, you know, some of them are there, you know, wants to see, you know, cool
My
stuff
problem
just like
is,
the rest
is
of
I'm
us
like,
do.
Am I seeing the actual celebrity, or is somebody just doing that good of a cosplay? Like,
oh, yeah, the one, like, celebrity...
Like, I almost, like, you know... I'm almost like, you know, some of the Deadpools are so spot on. I'm like, I would not be surprised if Ryan Reynolds is not in a dead suit, you know, costume, dead. Just, you know.
Because there was one guy that was in the, like, walking around without the mask on and had the makeup done up. And I'm like, dude, that kind of looks like Reynolds. Like, I was like, I don't know if he may have snuck in. Because I know, like, whatever, Adam Savage used to always do the cosplay undercover where he would show up in some weird ass costume and see if anybody knew it was him. I'm like, did Reynolds unofficially show up for Dragon Con? Because that looks pretty dead on.
Yeah, I mean, I did, you know, hear, I didn't see, but heard there were, you know, quite a few celebrity sightings, you know, at Dragon Con. And that's kind of the cool thing, you know? I mean...
Yeah, I did see Sharknado himself, Ian Ziering, at one point, and I was like, oh, I wish we could have interviewed him, because...
And I did see several Sharknado cosplays. Yep. Like, you know, in fact, speaking of children... you know, there was one kid that I saw and had, like, the swirl with a bunch of plastic sharks, you know, glued onto it and stuff. I'm like, that is perfect. Like, I hope he made front row of Ian's panel.
Yeah, and we saw the weird... Speaking of weird mashups, I did see, if anybody's played Final Fantasy VII, you know, the main character Cloud, there was a Cloud dressed as Cloud. He was like a big fluffy white cloud with the giant Buster sword and the cloud helmet.
Yeah, that, you know, I saw several clouds, several, you know, somebody did a really good Sephiroth, too, from Final Fantasy VII. Like, it's crazy. I haven't played some of those games in so long that, you know, I see stuff and it, you know, triggers a memory and I'm like, shit, I know where it's from. It's... And it never comes to me while I'm at con, and then, like, a week later, it's like, shit, that was Final Fantasy VII.
Like, the one celebrity brief, almost like our Stan Lee cameo from last year, I'm a huge X-Files fan, and Mitch Pileggi, who played Director Skinner, and I can't remember the actor's name, who played the cigarette-smoking man, they were both there this year, and we were heading down a hallway to get to an interview room, and Mitch Pileggi comes, like, walking out of a side room, like, heading back to the autograph area. I'm like, holy shit, it's Director Skinner.
And that's
a big dude.
Shit.
Like, yeah, he could probably whoop your ass. No wonder he's always playing these, like, Navy SEALs and, like, you know, military dudes, because that's a big dude in real life.
Like, it's kind of crazy, you know, to see some of these people on the screen, and, you know, you're like, they're big, and then you see them in life, and it's like, oh, no, he's huge.
That's like a couple years ago when we ran into Stephen Amell.
Yes.
That's a big dude. I was like, holy shit. No wonder he's doing that salmon ladder and shit. I mean, that dude's, like, burly as fuck. He doesn't, you know, because he's got all these, there's all a bunch of tall people on Arrow, so he doesn't look that tall until you see him in real life, and you're like, oh, shit, that's a big dude.
Yeah. It's like, I don't have to look up to too many people, but.
Yeah, because I'm, like, 6'2", and Stephen still, like, Stephen Amell was, like, I mean, he was a little taller than I was. I was like, holy shit. And, of course, like Ric Flair, saw him at his table, of course, hitting on some ladies when we walked through. So, being Ric Flair.
Woo! I would have loved to had an interview with him, just, you know, to say that he got to sit down with the Nature Boy himself.
Yeah. Oh. So, you know, panel-wise, you know, like I said, we did a lot of partying in Rome, and we didn't hit a bunch of panels.
Actually, I think we did more panels this year than we did last year, which...
Of the ones we've seen, there was a particular highlight for you?
Absolutely, and it's probably going to be the same one that you say.
Oh, would that be the Henson panel?
Yes, you know, seeing Brian Henson, I got that right.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. You know, and him... You know, talking about the Happy Time murders, and I think one of the coolest things about it was he was showing a lot of the snippets on how the effects company actually, you know, made the puppets move, how, like, you know, the lead puppet Phil, how they actually had him blowing smoke and everything, and,
yeah,
you know, seeing all of the green screen and, like, you know.
Yeah, because it was a weird combination of practical and, like, CG, just kind of, like, mainly just, like, removing puppeteers and stuff. Because, you know, normally, like, you know, if you're watching Sesame Street or any of these other ones, there's, like, kind of like a cheat where there's, like, a wall or something for people to hide behind, or the puppets are stationary. But in this movie, they're walking around and interacting with the environment. So it was, like, kind of a technological advancement as far as puppetry goes.
But, you know, I you know, listening to him, you know, and, you know, seeing it and... I mean, I was like, just some of the improv, you know, lines that were used by the actor. I mean, of course, you know, some of them have scripts, but, you know, a lot of them were famous improv comedians. So, you know, it's like, have fun with it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is, I want this character to, you know, be grimacing or be strung out or whatever. So, you know, do your best improvs.
Yeah, and some of those outtakes improv stuff from the puppeteers, too, is hilarious. Because even when they're, like, making jokes, like, off camera, they're still in character. Like, so the puppets are saying fucked up shit. And it's like, that's hilarious. And it was a cool thing, too, because not only was he talking about the movie, he was talking a little about the history of the Henson Company and stuff and how, you know, they sold off the company at one point, but they weren't really happy with the way they're doing it, so they bought the company back, so the Hensons now own it. But a lot of people are like, oh, y'all are doing, like, very adult stuff with your puppets now. Isn't this weird? And he was like, no, you know, because, you know, Jim Henson, you know, his dad would do that stuff all the time. You just weren't familiar with it, because he said, like, before he got sold the, you know, the Muppet Show, he started off on, like, Saturday Night Live and doing more, like, and so they've always had kind of the I forgot what they call it, but it's like their theater show that they do that's more adult-oriented comedy with the puppets. So it's like, this is not something new we've done. It's just something that, like, you know, the first time we've done, like, you know, movie-wise.
And listening to him, you know, I've seen, you know, quite a few documentaries on whether it be the ESRB for video games or the MPAA for, you know, trying to rate movies and stuff. And, you know, the fact that, you know, he was talking about a particular scene involving Silly String, and he's like... That scene almost earned this film an NC-17 rating, and he's like, you know, for something as, you know, silly as Silly String, when you see all of the violence, you know, and, you know, lifelike nudity and everything else on film, and he's like, I you know, just some of these people I don't understand. You know, I mean, yes, the movie deserves an R, but to push it to an NC-17 threshold, I'm like, no.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, that panel actually inspired me to go see the Happy Time Murders a few days ago. And, you know, it was just a hilarious, I can, you know, veg out and enjoy myself. Dude, had the theater to myself and the girlfriend. It was amazing.
Yeah, I've got to sneak away sometime this week and go see it. I haven't had a chance to check it out yet. But yeah,
I need to go see movies on Thursdays all the time.
I really want to go check that out now. Oh, yeah, that one may inspire an entire episode once I see it. Because that panel was amazing. Yeah, and there's another. We made it, like I said earlier, we made it to, because we talked about the vast array of people you run into at Dragon Con, because not only is it, you know, actors and producers, But you get like NASA. I mean, there was a bunch of NASA scientists and writers there, and we went to the, I don't know, it was like tactical medical emergency medical panel, and it was there was like a doctor, three nurses, like a military medic, EMT, like it was like, you know, legit, you know, professionals presenting this panel. It wasn't just, you know, people like us talking shit in our basement. It was, I mean, you can go to panels that are taught by actual professionals in whatever field that they're covering.
And I mean, it was
covering.
Awesome, you know, just because, you know, I mean, you don't ever want bad shit to happen, but, you know, if it ever does, you know, most people just freeze or they don't know how to handle a situation. So, you know, getting a certain mindset and, you know, listening to folks talk about the available resources and, you know, free training, you know, yeah. Like, you know, people oftentimes think, oh, I've got to go get a medical degree to be able to treat, you know, or to, you know, take care of somebody that may have sustained an injury. No, there's, you know, free resources out there where, you know, you take a few hour course. Yes, it may teach you the very basics, but those basics may prevent somebody that wants to help from doing more harm than good. And
at least going to keep you alive long enough to like actual professionals to arrive.
Yeah. And, you know, that was the thing is, you know, it was a very, you know, basic but informative. You know, a lot of people, you know, will, like they said, rush to Amazon, order the cheapest, you know, tourniquet, you know, that they can without any training, or, you know, they research online and get, you know, a whole lot of bad information that they don't know to, oh, I should disregard this because now it's taught these are the things. Or, you know, old...
I mean, there's where I work, there's a 5-Eleven tactical store down the street. And they have, like, pre-made, like, med kits you can buy. And they regularly have, like, free classes on how to use, like, the medical products and stuff that they sell. So it's like, you know, there's resources out there to, you know, get better knowledge to, you know, better prepare yourself for, you know, shit hit the fan scenario.
Well, I mean, even if, you know, let's say that, you know, shit hasn't hit the fan, but I mean, the
car hit something scenario.
You know just... I mean, you're hiking through the woods and sustain, you know, some sort of an injury or something like that. Like, you know, you might be a few hours away from actual medical care. So these are some things that you can do that once you get to care that you're going to have a much better outcome than, I don't know what to do. I should just rub some dirt on it.
Yeah, and we went to the martial arts weapons panel and learned, you know, all martial arts weapons start with two basic moves. It's either a pokey or a whacky. If you can poke or whack, you can learn how to use martial arts
weapons.
So
just remember, folks, slappy pokey.
Yep, and the reverse six.
And reverse six.
That's how you defend against the slappy pokey. Once you learn how to slappy pokey,
I mean, you know,
you learn to defend against slappy pokey.
But even then, like, you know, I mean, stuff that sounds so simple and so primitive, right? You know, I mean, as a like they use the example of kids, right? A kid, if they're going to hit something, doesn't immediately throw a punch. You know, they come over the shoulder and with a downward motion. And that's something that anybody can do. So, you know, one of the examples they have is like, you know, vaping's pretty popular right now. Everybody has, you know, or a lot of folks have, you know, metal vape pens. That is a very good bludgeoning device. You know, you take one to the bridge of the nose or to any of the major pressure points.
Shit's going to hurt.
You know, you're going to get somebody's attention and stun them enough to, you know, hopefully be able to get yourself away or, you know, for somebody to, you know, intervene that either law enforcement or is better prepared to handle the situation.
Yeah, when I was a police officer, like, I always kept steel shafted pens. So if, like, a worst case scenario, I'm writing a ticket and somebody jumps me, I can, like, stab somebody with my pen because it's like a metal shaft. I mean, it's just like you use what you got at hand to defend yourself if need be. But yeah, that we've kind of wandered off the Dragon Con.
No, I mean that absolutely, you know, ties into Con because that happened at Con. I mean, that's just the, you know, the plethora of information that's available. That, you know, I mean, you know, I think oftentimes, like, I see so many, you know, folks that have never been that are like, I want to experience Dragon Con, but I don't know how to make costumes or I don't have costumes. Like, most of the time now, I go for Con for comfort.
Yeah.
I'm in shorts and a t-shirt. That's
Yeah, pretty much, like I said, the only costuming I do, the last 2 years we've done Mario and Luigi and Peach. And you know, like, for us, it's...
I'm tired of being Luigi. I'm tired of the Warios picking on me.
But for us, it's like overalls and a shirt. I mean, that's like the basic of it. Or when I dress up as Captain Hammer, hell, I didn't even put the pants on. I'll walk around in a kilt with a Captain Hammer shirt and some gloves. It's simple, comfortable costumes is what I like. I don't have to spend the months and thousands of dollars building movie quality costumes. You do see that, and those people look like they're having a blast, but I'm like, I don't have the money or the patience or the skill to pull something off like that.
You know, for people that aren't familiar with Dr. Horrible's sing-along, check that out, because that was probably one of the most artistic things that I saw at Dragon Con. This is the first year, but they did a full-on musical
because they've done
set changes. And
if anyone's been to a Rocky Horror show where it's like they play the movie and there's a little cast that does stuff interacting with the movie, they've done that in the past, but this is the first year they actually hired a full-on like theatrical troupe, and they didn't show the movie. They did a full musical reenactment of the movie with even like between like scene setups. They pulled some songs that are, I guess, from like the deleted scenes on the DVD that weren't in the actual production to like entertain us while the staff was changing out the scenery. And it was kind of cool too, because in the movie, if you've not seen it, there's parts where he's in the Dr. Horrible costume and parts when he's in street clothes. So they had two different actors. So when those scenes where it's flashing back and forth between Dr. Horrible and, you know, Billy, you know, it was actually two different actors coming out. So I was like, that was kind of a cool way to pull that
yes.
off.
You know, but, you know, as a musician myself, I mean, I loved it. You know, my only quirk is if that's something they're going to continue, they need to, you know,
work on the audio portion of
it. The tech ops folks, I mean, not picking on them because, you know, this is the first time that's been done. But, you know, so many of the panels are just, you know, either one or maybe three or four folks just speaking. And, you know, when you're doing a live music production, you know, your audio equipment and stuff like that has to be set up a little bit differently. And, you know, there were...
Yeah, and they were saying this was like literally the first time they performed that on that stage.
And I think that was the other thing, is they didn't get access to that stage until the night of the performance. So, I mean, you know, I just... Maybe the hotels will cooperate a little bit more or, you know...
But yeah, other than like some of the sound quality issues, it was an awesome show.
But I mean, the talent was just absolutely freaking phenomenal. And, you know, I don't know. For me, I always love to see live performances like that.
Yeah, and you know, now that you've brought up music, let's talk about some of the musical performances of Dragon Con, because Dragon Con's also like a pretty cool concert series.
Yeah, Crux Shadows.
Yeah. Crush okay. Shadows and Voltaire. You're going to see them every year.
You know, last year we had MC Chris. You know, if you're a nerd, you know MC Chris. A lot of folks that aren't nerds know MC Chris for several of the
Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
MC Pee Pee Pants. You know, from Adult Swim.
Yeah, but this year if you're a steampunk music fan, there was Abney Park there. I think that's the first time I've seen them at Dragon Con. And but like that was the other thing too. Like I said, the concert series kind of started off late the night we went. So by the time they went on stage, I was supposed to go on stage at like 1:30. They didn't hit till like 2:30, and by that time I'm like, oh, I'm an old man. I'm starting to pass out. So I only made it like three or four songs in. But what I saw of it was pretty good. And other people I talked to that made it through the whole thing said it was a cool show. Escape the Clouds was there this year. The Extraordinary Contraptions were there. But the band that we didn't intend to see. That we kind of wandered in.
And before you go into it, you know, just imagine you're wandering a hotel lobby and you're like, I just, you know, want to get away from the crowds. And you wander into a random ballroom because you know there's a show about to start. You don't know what show it is, the type of show, or anything else.
Yeah, because we were getting in line for Abney Park, so we had no idea what was about to appear before us. And it's a band called Cybertronic Spree, which Google them, go to their Facebook, check them out on YouTube, and we'll probably throw one of their songs in here as our intro or outros. But it's a Transformers band. And every member of the band is in full-on Transformers costumes. Their lead guitarist is dressed as Unicron. And their lead singers are Hot Rod and RC. And they rocked hard for a... I'm not a musician, you are, but I was amazed that someone could play in the costumes they were wearing. Even the drummer was in a full Transformers outfit. And the drummer was one of the little cassettes from Soundwave. Rumble. Yeah, Rumble was the drummer.
So, I mean, you know, just the fact that they're in these elaborate costumes. I mean, I see bands like GWAR and, you know, some of the others.
Yeah, very much like
a
GWAR size costume.
You know, that's just, I can get up on stage and I can play. You put all of that stuff on me, I'm probably not going to know how to function. So, you know, just the fact of, you know, one, they're in these big-ass costumes, but then two, just the sound quality and the, you know, sheer talent of the vocals. I'm you know, pretty much a metalhead, I guess, if you were going to define me.
I'm definitely a hardcore fan of not just the growling death metal, but the 80s, like, freaking metal.
And these guys, you know, were doing power ballads. They're doing, you know, a lot of power rock songs. Ventured into, you know, just some standard hard rock.
Yeah, because if you've ever seen, like, the 1980s Transformers cartoon movie, it was a combination of covers from that soundtrack and original music, and then a couple other just random, like, you know, old metal songs.
I mean,
thrown
dude,
in.
Their version of Pokemon was awesome.
Yes, I mean, I was, and whoever the, because I heard later on from one of my friends that, like, they had like their own change room and no one was allowed to see them outside, like, out of makeup and costume. So no one even really knows what these people look like in real life. But the girl who was playing RC, she had some lungs on her because she was like belting out some of the songs that she was like the lead singer on. I was like, oh my god, these people like freaking rock. It wouldn't surprise me that there's some like big band like when they're not in costume.
Probably like a Lindsay Hell or somebody. Yeah. Like, you know,
that's why you're not allowed to see any of them, is because they're like legitimate artists when they're not. It's like the thing they do for fun.
But I mean, you know, that was just such a, you know, like, you know, when they first took this, dude, I mean, it was almost like the first time I saw Stranger Things, right? Yeah. I mean, just the 80s nostalgia that comes over you and you're like, holy shit.
Yeah, because they had a fan table down there in the bottom of the Marriott where the Crux Shadows in the Netherworld always is. And I'd seen, like, video playing some of their stuff, but I never really stopped to pay attention. I'm so like, oh, that's cute. Freaking Transformers band. And then they showed up. I'm like, holy shit, these guys are awesome. I need to go pick up their album.
So, yeah, I mean, that's another beauty of, you know, Dragon Con is just, you see so much. And, you know, I mean, like, I you know, I mean, I see people's like, you know, you got to pre-plan everything, and you know,
we had zero
when
plan.
When I go to con, like, I don't make any plans. Now, obviously, if there's a big celebrity panel that I want to, you know, check out, and I'm like, okay, I know this is going to be packed. So yeah,
that's one of the things I miss. I wanted to get into one of the Stranger Things panels because a couple of the Stranger Things kids were there this year, and I didn't make it to those because it was always like, hey, we should go to that thing, and then we're like, oh shit, we missed that thing. But yeah, it's like, I think going to the con with no plan and just experiencing it as it comes is probably one of the highlights.
You know, I
it's very less stressful when you just don't make a plan and just kind of take it as it goes.
I mean, that's the thing, is I feel like, you know, oftentimes folks are, you know, always on time crunches and, you know, it becomes stressful and, you know, you miss so much of the magic that is the con, you know, just because you're trying to adhere to a specific itinerary.
Yeah, because there's a lot of panels and parties we end up that we're just roaming around and go, hey, what's going on in this room? Let's go check it out. And like, oh, this is kind of cool. Like that one party we ended up going to on our way to something else because I thought it was the last party on Alderaan because it was in the location that party normally takes place, but apparently that had been moved to like the Hilton. So we walked in and like, you know, DJ rocking it hard. And I'm like, oh, this says Trek Track. I don't even know what party we wandered into, but it's a pretty good show.
Yeah. I mean,
hung out with a freaking Skeletor.
Then the, I guess the most unique thing that I saw was a little film called Fatal Future.
That's what I was going to bring up. Because Dragon Con TV is always a fun thing, and then this came on one night. Go ahead and tell them about your favorite movie.
I didn't see the beginning half. I don't know. I only saw the end half, and I was perplexed.
Hour and a half.
I was confused. I have no clue, but it's on Amazon Prime. So, folks, go and check out a little film called Fatal Future. Yeah. Leave us some feedback. We'll do a Fatal Future episode. I'm sure there's 3 hours of content to work with.
Oh, yeah, because it started off when we walked in as like, it looked like the acting was intentionally bad, and what should have been a 5-10 minute Dragon Con TV skit just kept going on, and it was like a feature length movie they played. The comment section in the Dragon Con Facebook group was just like, guys, are you watching Dragon Con? What is this?
Funny because the creators of the film started jumping into the comment thread, and it was like,
all I know is he is the world's greatest hacker and greatest soldier. Because he says it like 50 times.
So, my recommendation, check out Fatal Future, and let's do a podcast.
God, no.
Hey, we'll do a Fatal Future podcast for the Patreon subscribers.
Oh, God. Yeah, check out the ESO Patreon site.
So
we've been looking for something to do for the Patreon people. Yeah, that's something we can throw it together.
I mean, nobody wants to listen to the Eddie McClintock interviews or, you know, anything of that nature, or Timothy Zahn. You know, folks don't care about that. They want to know about Fatal Future. And I'm here to say, folks, check it out, experience it, and let's discuss.
Oh, yeah. And so as we're kind of getting toward the end here, you know,
Fatal Future.
Is there any, like, negative experience? Is there anything you saw that you're like, we can do better or needs improvement? Was there any disappointing Dragon Con moments this year?
The fact that people that pre-registered got a generic lanyard and we got press passes without a generic lanyard.
those lanyards are actually pretty cool. I might have to steal my wife's for next year. Oh
no. I bring like 4 lanyards to Dragon Con every year.
And forget just, them.
Well, just to make sure I always have them. One, I don't like the clips that come on the badges. Like, you know, I feel like, you know,
I'm always afraid I'm going to lose those if it's just.
Yes. You know, I definitely prefer the clasp hook over the little clippy thing, especially, you know, sometimes folks see press and they think that, oh, this is going to give me exclusive access to everything. And, you know, they want to get a little too hands-on-y, and you're just like,
nope, we still have to wait in lines.
The only negative is don't be a drunk Irish asshole.
Oh, yeah, that's a great one. Yeah, I have my own negative thought, but let me tell the Irishman story, because, I mean, it wasn't that much of a negative because, you know, it gave us a story to tell. Was it Saturday night? And, like, we're at our usual smoking spot of the Hilton Pool, or the Hyatt Pool, and this guy shows up who's probably 5'2". And we're not making fun of Irish people. This guy was legitimately Irish and so drunk he could barely stand. And then walks up and hits on my wife. And she's like, you know, like, you don't want to do that. My husband's that big guy over there. And we're not, you know, nearly as drunk as he is at this point. We're just trying to enjoy our cigars and a little whiskey. And he's like, don't worry, I'm going to go box him. And comes up to me and starts talking about boxing and all this other stuff. And I just look at him and go, bro, you don't want to. And he turns around and like walks off. But then he comes back and starts messing with these kids. Well, they're not kids. They're in their 20s. But they're, you know,
less equipped to handle themselves than said situation.
And that's the thing too about, you know, people talk about like, you know, toxic masculinity. I was like, you know, if you're a man, you know, you don't have to be a dick, you know. Look out for your others, and, you know, and you know, if you have the ability to protect people, you should always protect people. So we're talking to these guys, And say, one of them's got a man bun, and Irishman comes up to him and starts talking shit about his hair and then grabs his ass. And he's like, whoa, my safe word is cucumber, like, or whatever it was. And he's like, I don't know if the guy wanted to have sex with me or fight me. He's like, I'm a lover, not a fighter. And I go, don't worry, bro. We're fighters. We'll take care of him if he comes back. And then these guys are like, we're going to hang out with you the rest of the night because y'all are like, you know, intimidating in a good way.
So, I mean,
when you're a big bearded guy smoking cigar and drinking whiskey, like, you know, people not going to fuck with you unless you're a drunk Irish man.
So, yeah, I mean, that, you know, is a prime example of folks that often takes things a little too far. And, you know, at that point, we were able to intervene without, you know, any situation arising. But, you know, that, you know, I mean, that's one of the things, you know, is you look out for your fellow congoers. And, you know, unfortunately, not everybody there is to just, you know, relax and have a good time.
Oh, but the only
negative... I mean, that guy probably was, but he was so drunk, he probably, you know, has no recollection of what the hell he was even doing.
But the only negative for me is the highlight of my con... Because I love guns, is always going down to the armory and looking at all the cool toys. And I wandered down to the armory this year, and there was no guns. And I go into the knife section, and I look around at all the cool knives and stuff, and I finally ask him, like, dude, where's the good armory? You know, where's the shooty things? And he's like, oh, no, we were asked not to, like, bring that back and not to do gun programming this year. And I'm just like, what the fuck, man? I mean, it was kind of just a pussy move and I kind of made my opinion known. But I'm like, that was the only disappointing thing, because like I said, that's kind of like one of the highlights of my con, is I always go down there and look at all the cool shooty things, and there was no shooty things this year, and it kind of made me sad panda.
But there is a Dragon Con Pro 2A group that will be happy to discuss all of the shooty things with you.
Yeah, I haven't gone to see what their reaction was yet in their Facebook group, but I'm sure there's some strong opinions over there. And it seems like, you know, because the armory always had, like, you know, not only like the medieval and martial arts and stuff panels, but they also had, you know, panels on guns and whatnot. And it seemed like some of that stuff kind of ended up in the Apocalypse Rising track, because I noticed they had a few gun-related panels. But, yeah, I'm just kind of disappointed. Because, I mean, hell, the armory, like, one year even had, like, a freaking tank out there in the damn parked on the street advertising the armory. I'm like, so, yeah, I'm kind of disappointed that they, you know, kind of wussed out on in that regard.
Speaking of the street. And I'm going to go back to cosplay for a minute, but there was somebody that did the World War II Captain America on the World War II style bike.
Oh, yes.
Just cruising around, you know, the entrance to one of the hotels. And dude, that was freaking amazing.
Yeah, that was legit. When he rolled up on that, old military Harley in the full, like, you know, World War II cap outfit, I was like, holy shit, that's amazing. Because, yes,
that was one of the Hollywood reproductions that, you know, it's just like, yes.
Yeah, that one was, I was like, oh, the crap, that's amazing. And like, I saw, passed a modernized Ecto-1 at one point that was pretty cool. Yeah, there's always some, like, cool, like, vehicles and stuff that people bring to the parade. But, yeah, the Cap doing, you know, cruising the strip on his Harley was freaking amazing. So as we kind of wrap up, do you got any con highlights, you know, particular favorite memories, costumes, shenanigans?
I didn't get the crud.
Yeah, I had pre-con crud, so I got sick before, so I didn't get sick after.
So you got that nice immune system boost?
Yeah. Oh. Let's, you know.
A discoverance of alcohol-infused ice cream and how delicious it can be.
Yeah, what was it? Oh, was it Patty's something other? I forgot what the name of the booth was, but it was like... It was like an Irish pub-themed ice cream stand in the Hilton. And they had like a couple little ice cream stands over there. But yeah, alcohol-infused ice cream. And we had the Dragon's Fire. It was good. And I also tasted some of the... there was an Oreo one that was kind of like a mudslide. I mean, that was pretty awesome. I didn't get to try it, but they had a dude-themed one too that was basically a frozen white Russian.
So, you know, obviously pie is always a staple of Dragon Con. Next year, I'm going to... I didn't do any this year, but I'm going to make a batch of pie because I think pie with the alcoholic ice cream is going to be a wonderful combination.
Are you
going to
enter the pie contest this year? Because our roommate, CJ, actually took third in Pie Makers event.
See, I haven't tried much of other people's pies, so I'm not quite sure how mine compares, but I might leave it to the judge's fate to, you know, see. But, I mean, there's a lot of infusions that happen, and, I mean, me personally, why mess with a good thing with key limes and peaches and blackberries and cherries, you know? I mean...
And there's so many different variants.
I want
variants.
What tastes like what Grandpappy, you know, pulled off the still.
And, you know, we also, of course, made it to the fifth annual Dragon Con cigar meetup at the phone booth. Who I've got some issues with the phone booth currently, but the party itself was pretty good. I mean,
the raffle prizes.
There was a bunch of raffles. There was like giving away cigars. Somebody won like a $100-$200 cigar. There's some cool artwork. I end up winning a half gallon flask that's brand, like Alec Bradley cigars branded, like leather wrapped. You got a Rocky Patel
whiskey glass set.
We should break that out and inaugurate those.
which is kind of cool because when we interviewed Rocky Patel, one of the things he gave me was a T-shirt, and that T-shirt is the same edition as the whiskey glass set.
Nice.
Which is the same edition as the, you know, hat that I had him sign and stuff for me. So
sweet.
Have to
get
I'm
it all
have
suited
to
up.
Do like a a Rocky Patel wall or something down here in the
Yeah, cuz there's one piece of artwork I saw that I want, and I've yet to find it where I can purchase it, is the law enforcement firefighter Rocky Patel sign. That one's cool. I've been wanting to. I keep seeing it going up at like events and stuff, and I've not been able to win one or buy one yet. But that's one that needs to go in my collection. And with that, we'll be stay tuned because we did, of course, it's Dragon Con. We did some interviews, so we'll have some interviews coming up. And
what are we gonna throw in here?
Well, we'll see.
Ooh, surprises! Stay tuned.
It's time for Blowing Smoke.
And welcome to Blowing Smoke. So we got a couple Dragon Con interviews for you. First up, any friends of our fans of Warehouse 13, we talked to Eddie McClintock Agent Pete Latimer of Warehouse 13 and guest star of many, many, many other shows. So here you go.
This is huge.
Welcome back to Dragon Con.
Thank you.
What are you looking forward to this weekend?
Seeing as many Uhuras in bunless leather chaps as I can, which is always a high point, you know, for me. I just like the energy of Dragon Con. The fact that this many people come and just go insane with their fandom, that's what I like to watch, you know. And I like the panels. I like to be able to, you know, talk about our show, you know, since it's cancellation and I don't get to talk about it that much anymore. And to see my old castmates. I saw Jamie Murray for the first time in a few years, and I haven't seen Joanne in a few years. So it'll be really nice to see everybody. Oh, and to make a bunch of money. To make shitload of money. That'll be good, too.
Oh, So now you're playing Jack Payne on Shooter. Yes. How's that going from such a light character of Pete Latimer to like more of a villain? Is that, you know, different acting muscles for you?
Interestingly, I try and make Jack as Pete-like as possible. It's, you know, for me, the most interesting villains on TV are the ones that you actually like, and despite the fact that they're doing terrible, terrible things, and like Goodfellas or Hannibal Lecter, you know, those characters I find more interesting. So when I was, they killed me, so I'm not on Shooter anymore. They had me back for an episode this season. But when I was playing Jack Payne, I tried to make him as likable and light as possible, even when he was doing terrible things. Kind of, he did it with a sense of elan, you know? Yeah.
My favorite villains are the ones that don't think they're a villain.
Exactly, exactly. It's like, you know, crazy people don't know that they're crazy. You know, they just are. And I find that more interesting. So for me, it wasn't difficult to play at all, really. And I think it was pretty effective. I've seen all the episodes, and I like the way it turned out. So, thank you. Hello, you in the back, whatever. Are you actually transcribing?
I am.
Old school.
Well, that's how I think.
Oh, that's cool.
So I saw you just wrapped on, I think, My Stepfather's Secret. Can you tell us about that?
That was a movie I did with Vanessa Marcil, mm-hmm. Who is so awesome, and she is, I mean, you know, it's like all actors get up and go, oh, she's just so talented and lovely, and most of the time I think it's bullshit, but in this particular case, you know, like I said to her, I go, oh my God, I'm so glad you're not crazy. you know, she's just very, and she's a good actress. Like, the director gave us the leeway to kind of just improv a little and kind of have fun and do whatever we wanted, and it was really a blast. The young gal Paris Smith, who, she's from a Disney show or Nickelodeon show, talented young lady, knows what she's doing. I think she's got a real bright future, and I just had, you know, it's just anytime I'm working, I'm having a good time for the most part. So I think it's going to end up on Lifetime. Usually that's where these movies that Michael Pfeiffer makes, they end up on Lifetime. So we'll see what happens. And I get to play a bad guy again. And again, like, you know, I would do stuff like creepy stuff, like when the 19-year-old, I'm supposed to be married to her mother, and any time that the daughter would leave the room, I'd give it like a creepy, creepy. So I tried to creep it up as much as possible, so we'll see if I pulled it off.
Excellent.
So if you can have a magical item from the warehouse, what powers would you want?
Well, the John Holmes penis pump.
Of course.
Was a big... I kept looking, and I couldn't... I never could find it. I, at the beginning, I always said it would be Janis Joplin's backstage pass from Woodstock. And whoever had the artifact could travel and to see any concert from any time. So I'd get to see all the bands that I missed.
That would be awesome.
You know, like the Doors and Zeppelin and Black Sabbath and all that. But the downside would be that you would become a terrible alcoholic, and the longer you held on to it, you know, the more your alcoholism and drug addiction would, and then you would go to, at the time, this was my joke, and it was timely, this is, tells you how long ago it was, I was like, you would ultimately end up in rehab with Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah. Oh, that could still happen.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. Could be.
there was the dream to do a movie about poop. How goes that?
I'm still looking for someone who's as committed to poop as I am. you know, I mean, I think poop is underrated, and frankly, it stinks. The fact that no one's behind poop, I mean. And then the poop itself. That's right, you wrote a great piece about my meeting, my conference in here. I appreciate that. Thank you. You made me look like
serious.
not an idiot, which is rare. Yeah, still no backers for poop.
I'm sorry.
I know. But yeah, anything else? Anyone else? Anyone? Bueller?
I'd like to hear about your t-shirt design this year.
Oh, my t-shirt design. Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, when I first got the way it started off was I wanted to do a wrap gift for the cast and crew. So I did these purple Warehouse 13 shirts that said Warehouse 13 Security and had a Tesla. Excuse me. And I think my wife, who's the brains of this operation, she was like, you should do T-shirts for your conventions. So it started here 7 years ago. And it's always just been a tradition here. This year's T-shirt is the front part of the design is a throwback to a previous incarnation of the shirt. Because it was the most popular, it was the one that everybody seemed to like the most. And then on the back, I put the Spinosaurusin, which was from an episode called Burnout, which was it was where, for me as an actor, we really find out how committed Pete is to his people. So the name of the shirt is True Blue. It's a blue T-shirt, and it's kind of a nod to Pete's commitment and loyalty to the Warehouse and to the Warehouse people, and then also a little nod from me to the fans in appreciation for how committed and True Blue they are as fans to the show. Thanks.
You've gotten to be a lot of like guest stars and a lot of big shows. Is there a particular favorite, and is there a current show you would love to be a guest on?
Gosh, there's been so many. I've had so much fun and been so lucky. I guess the Friends, when I did the two-part Friends episode, that's the one that sticks out. You know, they were all making $1 million an episode. And I think I was making like $400 or something. And to have been allowed to be on such an iconic show was a feather in my acting career cap, as it were. And people like notice, like they're like, you're the guy from Friends just from two episodes within 100 and or how many ever they did. So that's a good one. What show would I like? Sharp Objects with Amy Adams, I thought was really quite good. There were a few slow episodes, but the finale was great. Are you guys watching that at all? Really good. She's great. So that would be cool. I'd love to go do Castle Rock. I've always been a Stephen King fan, so I'd love to be able to go do that. I was up recently for a part in This Is Us, Vigo? The Ventimiglia or whatever? Milo's character was a Vietnam vet, so this was in the flashback part, and I would be playing his lieutenant, and I've always wanted to do that. I've always wanted to be a part of something that has to do with Vietnam or World War II. Like, I would have loved to have been in Saving Private Ryan or Platoon or Full Metal Jacket or something like that. Because I started when I was 18, I found out that the age for the average foot soldier, American foot soldier in Vietnam was 18, and it kind of blew my mind. I mean, when I was 18, I was like, you know, out to lunch. Like, I couldn't imagine what those guys had to go through, and then to come back to their country and to be spit on and called baby killer, you know, it must have been very hard, and those guys are still suffering. So, you know, anything that I could do to kind of shine a light on that and say, you know, maybe we should have a different different experience with those guys to help them. So
awesome.
Is that a wrap?
That's most of what I have. Anybody else?
Anything coming up
soon? No.
Darn.
Well, My Stepfather's Secret, but that probably won't be for a little while, because it's a film, so it takes longer to cut and move on. They have to sell it to Lifetime. You know, I'm just out there. I just, like I said, I did an episode of Shooter. They had me back as a in a flashback sequence, so that was nice. And I'm out there looking for my next gig, you know, which is what we do, I guess, unless you're David Boreanaz. Just go from show to show. Roll around naked in your money. I want to roll naked in my money. Like, I had some change the other day, and I threw down and I rolled naked in, and different coins got stuck to my parts. And that was chill. That was cold.
I feel like people thought would be an issue at some point. So
yeah.
Maybe coins are a better choice.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Hold on. See? That's why you're there, and I'm Monkey Boy. Dance, Monkey Boy, dance! Well, thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.
And welcome back. So part two of our Dragon Con interviews. We didn't get as many this year as we have in the past, but the ones we did get, absolute quality. So here you go with any Star Wars fans, especially the old EU and the new canon EU. We talked to prolific writer Timothy Zahn. And welcome back to the show. Today we're sitting down with extraordinary, legendary writer Timothy Zahn. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great.
So how's your con so far?
Typical Dragon Con, exciting, exhilarating, very tiring. You have to pace yourself for 4 days.
Oh, yes. Doing these interviews on Sunday, it's like, yeah, everyone, you know, us and guests too, is like, it's been 3 days.
Aren't we? Can't we go home yet?
Starting to run low.
That's what Coca-Cola is for. Fortunately, yes, this is Atlanta.
we have a big supply of it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, best known for, like, you know, our, you know, at least in the Dragon Con crowd, is, you know, a Star Wars writer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how did Grand Admiral Thrawn come about? You know, originally.
Well, when I was offered the three books that became the Thrawn trilogy, one of the things I knew I wanted to do right at the beginning was something that felt like Star Wars but wasn't what George Lucas had already done. So that meant no Vader type, no Emperor type, no Death Star, no super weapon. In trying to come up with a new villain, it occurred to me that, well, Vader rules by fear, the Emperor rules by manipulation. Someone who can lead through loyalty is more dangerous because the troops will trust him, fight for him whether he's in the room or not. So, okay, what kind of leader will the troops be loyal to? Has to be a tactical and strategic genius, so they know they're likely to win whatever battle they're put into. Doesn't get his ego wrapped up in a battle. If he sees he's losing, pull the troops out, don't waste them, pick another time and place. Willing to take suggestions from subordinates if they're good suggestions, bunch of things like that. And finally, because the Emperor didn't seem to like non-humans in the upper echelons, make him a non-human, because if he can get to be a Grand Admiral, he must be something very, very special.
Yeah, you know he's a bad man if he's come to the top despite everything. And that's one thing I liked about your character was that he was, you're dealing with Vader and the Emperor, and that they're very, fanatical leaders, where he's like the tactician, military man. It's like, definitely, he's, even though he's, on the wrong side, he doesn't seem like evil like the villains we've had before. He's like, and I always find it more interesting, a villain that doesn't think he's a villain.
Yeah, I mean, you look at some of the movie creations, Dr. Octopus, even Green Goblin, Loki certainly. They're on the other side, but you understand them. The viewer understands what they are doing, why they are doing it. And I think that's what you need for a good villain. You can have the iconic Sauron type, who is just pure evil and really has no other motivation. But it's much more interesting if your villain has motivations you understand, even if you don't agree with them. I've read enough history. I pretty well understand Adolf Hitler. Yeah. Completely do not agree with what he did, but I understand what he was doing and what he thought he should be doing, etc. So, and among other things, that's knowing history gives you a better sense of what's happening in the world, because things do tend to be cyclical. But yeah, getting back to fiction, if the villain is somebody you understand, it adds depth to the story.
And with when you started that trilogy, I mean, that there really wasn't that much of an expanded universe. You kind of started that whole progress, and you were, a lot more free. There was a lot less canon to deal with back then. So now that you're reintroducing, back into the new expanded universe, post Disney expanded universe,
we call this canon. Legends. Yeah, we're trying to get our terminology ingrained in our brains.
Is it kind of similar to when you started that back? Because there's not a whole lot to deal with in this new expanded universe.
Yeah, the canon now has fewer entries, fewer books. Of course, all of the movies, we're adding to movies and TV shows all the time. But yeah, the canvas is somewhat cleaner, somewhat emptier. It's easier to find a spot to put a new story. And of course, we now have the firm function of the story group, who keeps an eye on all the continuity questions. They can tell me what's coming up in a movie, or at least tell me, okay, this is going to interfere with something we've got coming up in a movie or a TV show or a game. Let's tweak it so it doesn't do that. Things I would never have access to. So that frees me up to just tell a story without this nagging fear in the back of my mind. I might change this. We're going to have to explain it over and over at conventions as to why I'm contradicting something somebody else has done.
And I, now that you're, because there is the Thrawn, the new Thrawn book, and Thrawn Allegiances. That one's still, I haven't started
Alliances.
That. Alliances, sorry. I'm working on the first one now. I haven't started that one yet. But now that you've reintroduced the character, have you done anything, obviously it's a younger one than we dealt with before. Has you changed the character for this go-around?
As far as I'm concerned, this is the same character I've always written. It's just in a different part of the timeline, different part of his career. He's dealing with a lot of different politics and military situation that we didn't have before. In the Thrawn trilogy, he was essentially the head of the Empire. In Thrawn and in Thrawn Alliances, he is working his way through the ranks. He is having to deal with the Emperor, with Vader, with the politics of the military, whatever prejudices the fleet has and Coruscant has. So it's the same character, but a very different scenario he's having to find his way through.
I do like how you kind of gave him, almost an inner monologue when he's, reacting to people and noting the things he's noticing. It gives him more of a kind of a Sherlock Holmes feel to him.
Yeah, we've got a little bit... as I think about it, that's very similar to what they did with the Robert Downey Jr. movies, of going through his mental process before a fight or something and then showing how it all plays out. A little bit, obviously different, because most of this is just observation rather than the fight choreography or something.
Yeah.
But something of that same feel of trying to understand and trying to read people and starting out not too good at it and getting much better.
Now that you've brought Thrawn back into canon. Are there any other characters that you created along the way that you hope to get the opportunity to bring back if in any wish scenario?
Most of them. No, the thing I'm looking for is what characters I developed would have a niche in the Star Wars universe that's not yet being filled. Thrawn is obvious because there are no other Imperial commanders like him that we've seen. Most have either been pompous and incompetent or quiet and competent but not brilliant. I think of people like Admiral Piett and Colonel Yularen. They are competent, they're capable, but they're not the same kind of brilliance Thrawn is. So he fills a niche that isn't there. Lucasfilm has done a lot in the past few years with trying to bring strong women into the canon with Rey and Jyn, but none of them is quite like, say, Mara Jade, because she was a former Imperial, and there will always be people in whatever position who will never trust her because of that background. So she's another strong female, but she's not quite the same as anybody else. So there would be a place to put her if Lucasfilm was willing to bring her into canon. Somebody like Talon Card, we've seen lots yes. of smugglers, but he's not just a smuggler. He's also information broker. And there is, again, nobody I can think of who's doing that particular job. So there would be a spot there I could bring the character in and have him fill something that's not being filled. So the idea that we're already filling in these spots isn't quite accurate. There are characters I've got that would work. And I have no idea if Lucasfilm would allow me to do that, but I will be proposing things down the line. And I've promised fans that if there's a story that would organically fit Mara or Card, I will propose it. And then story group gets to decide, story group and the Lucasfilm higher-ups above them. So I have no power over decisions, but I do have power over the pitching. So we'll see what happens.
So, I mean, you also wrote your own, your own books and wrote stuff in other universes. You know, from a writing standpoint, is it easier creating something, 100% from original or dealing in someone else's universe?
They're very different challenges. With Star Wars, a lot of the main characters are known by the readers. I don't have to reintroduce them. I don't have to explain who Han Solo is, etc. If I do my own, I have to tell the readers who they are, and usually through actions and dialogue and things of that sort, rather than exposition. But I also have to explain the tech, the political situation, all of that sort of thing. Whereas in Star Wars, it often just knowing what part of the continuity it's in tells you what the politics are, what the military is like. Are there rebels? Are there rebellion? Is there, separatists and republic, etc. In some ways, I like to liken it to doing Star Wars is like playing basketball. You've got a defined court size. You've got a defined number of people on the court. You've got this is a three-pointer, this is a two-pointer, free throws, etc., all the rules that come along with basketball. Creating my own universe and storyline is more like Calvin Ball, where Calvin and Hobbes get to pick and choose what rules they want. Now, Calvin always, part of the game was to change the rules midstream, and you can't do that once you've got them established in a book. But I can come up with all sorts of crazy ideas, like the Quadrille series. You go between stars inside giant tubes in trains that are running on four-tracked rails, and they're traveling at a light year per minute. You can't do anything remotely close to that in Star Wars, but I could create a coherent universe out of that concept.
And does it give you I've got this idea, but it doesn't fit the current thing that you're going to go in the file, like, all right, this is going to be something, or when you're working on something original, you're like, this might be something that can go in like Star Wars.
Typically when I'm working out a new storyline or whatever, I know what it's going to be in. If it's going to be Star Wars, I know what the rules are. I can tailor the story to fit that. If I'm working on my own one, I know I can make up the rules. So I seldom have anything, oh, that's going to work. That would work in Star Wars. This would work not in Star Wars. I just, the direction I'm going when I start plotting out automatically is in the correct side of the line.
Is there any other universe that you've not worked in that, you know, if you had the opportunity, would you love to go play in?
About the only one I would like to do that I think I would be competent at would be Doctor Who. However, I have heard that they don't want probably Americans inundating them, so they've kept all of that, all the books and such, for the way it's been described to me, as people with British passports. So unless I emigrate to Great Britain or something, I probably will never get the chance. On the other hand, I expect any day now that Disney will buy the BBC, and we'll just see what happens then.
Like, yeah, they own everything at this point. So
pretty near, yeah.
You know, going to these conventions, of course, everyone, you know, fanboys over you and Star Wars. What are you fanboy over? What's your passions outside of your own work?
I like various TV shows and movies and such. I'm a big fan of the Marvel MCU. I really appreciated the way they've been constructing their universe, the way they've fit everything together. I went into Infinity War very leery about how are you going to get this many characters enough screen time to make it seem like they're not walk-ons, and they did a marvelous job, split them up into different combinations. Worked very well. I'm looking forward to the end part of that. Various TV shows. We enjoyed The Librarians.
That's a good series,
too. A lot of fun with that one. Interesting stories and a lot of tongue-in-cheek humor as well. Oddly enough, perhaps, or maybe perhaps not, one of the most tightly plotted things we've seen lately is Gravity Falls, which we just discovered a while back.
Check that one out.
Disney animated, but quite well done, very, very interesting, very well written and produced and such. So things like that. I don't fanboy very often. I did. I a couple 3 years ago at New York Comic Con, I was at the, their Del Rey booth doing some signings and such, and someone came up behind me and said, "I understand you're writing books about me." I turned around, and there was Emperor Palpatine.
That is awesome.
Yes, and so we talked for a few minutes. Everybody on the other side of the table is madly taking pictures and such. And I when he left, you know, I said to people, I don't have fanboy moments very often. That was one of them.
Oh, yeah, when you meet the source material.
Yes, yes.
Wow.
Especially unexpectedly like that.
And some of the other, Thrawn books you've done in the sort of Scoundrels is one mm-hmm. probably one of my favorites, because it's kind of a new thing for the Star Wars. You know, it wasn't really space opera. It was more of a crime novel.
Well, Scoundrels was deliberately set up to be Ocean's 11 meets Star Wars. In fact, my original title was Solo's 11, and they wouldn't let me do that, which I thought was ridiculous. Okay, you know, Solo, you've got trademarked, 11 is a number. What's Warner Brother going to complain about? And if they do, we'll change the title then. But, that was deliberately set up. One of the impetuses, I'd been thinking about something like that for a while, and was talking with, at the time, the editor, Shelley Shapiro, and Sue, I think it was Sue Rostoni. And they were thinking, you know, the expanded universe at that time is so big, people hesitate to know where to jump in. And people who are not necessarily sci-fi fans are a little bit intimidated. So the idea of having a heist book set in Star Wars might be something we can pitch to people, get them in on a less threatening or less worrisome level. So I'd already been thinking about the story, and we can worked it all out, the details and everything. And that was a lot of fun to do, because I enjoy that kind of heist movie, not the ones where everybody's going to stab each other in the back, but things like The Ocean's 11 or The Sting, where this is just a group of bad guys working together.
Yeah, it's like not like a robbery movie or something. They're going to shoot up the place. These are like skilled criminals that it's like, you know, you want it to people like not even know that they've been there until it's like, where'd all my stuff go?
Yeah, exactly.
So as we kind of wrap this up, where can people follow you and find you and pick up your pick up your books and see what you're doing next?
I've got a Facebook page, facebook.com/TimothyZahn. We post new publications. If I, you know, sign a contract or something, I can let people know appearance schedule, convention listing, and such. We keep that updated. The notes section has hopefully full list, and it's, I add something in. We can post it on the main page. So that's just keep an eye on that, and you'll know where I'm going to be and what books will be coming out. Something that hits the stands, I'll announce that as well.
And there's one last question. I just Star Wars Rebels, you know, in their last season, mm-hmm. you know, brought the Grand Admiral in. Did you have any kind of input on that? And you know, what did you think of actually seeing him in, well, the animated flesh?
Yeah, I did not have any input. By the time they could tell me about it, they were well into production of season 3, which was his debut. They did a marvelous job of bringing him to life and to screen. The writers, directors, you know, producers all understood the character. They knew how to write for him. They knew how to play people around him, against him or for him or whatever. I was very, very happy with that portrayal. I think Dave Filoni, Cary Hart, everybody did a wonderful
job. It
was pretty
good. I really enjoyed it. I mean, that's with these Star Wars stories, one-off films, we need a Grand Admiral Thrawn film. I mean, that's
only if they do them right.
Yes.
I mean, we need someone who understands the character.
Yes.
Filoni and his crowd definitely did. Anybody else, I don't know. There's no way of knowing until they try it.
Yeah, in prison. We need a good Admiral Thrawn.
Yes, let's specify that, right.
Well, we appreciate your time. Thank you for sitting down with us, and enjoy the rest of your con.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
And now that we've kind of wrapped up, any final thoughts on this here strange passage of Dragon Con and the strange passage cigar we're smoking?
So the strange passage is anything but strange. No, I
the Stranger Things.
It is exactly as it was described, and I got every note of the cigar, and I guess that is strange in itself. I mean, oaky, woody, spicy, almost a hint of espresso at times. This is one of those refreshing, like, My taste buds don't realize what happens, and it is a breath of fresh life with every puff. You know, oftentimes we talk about cigars, and we'll say, well, the first third was, you know, more spice or oakiness or something. This one here took on every flavor all throughout the smoke, and I mean, it was just a wonder wheel of conglomeration and a mashing. And dude, if you're looking for something to get you outside of the comfort box, and you're just like, I just want my taste buds to just go, wow, this is it.
Yeah, I definitely get what they say about being multidimensional. This is like, you know, Barry running through the multiverse. It's got a lot of different flavors and makes a lot of changes throughout the smoke. But they all complement one another.
Like, there wasn't anything that I was like, oh, that was kind of off-putting or something. Like,
And it's a multi-country blend, just like Dragon Con itself. Wakanda forever and whatnot.
So I was talking to one of the staff members at the cigar shop about branching out, trying new things. I always try, you know, to find something different, but you know, I've got my cigars that I know won't let me down.
Yeah.
And sometimes I find myself staying a bit too much in that comfort zone.
And especially when things start getting a little higher in price,
it's harder
to gamble on.
You know, and usually I'm like, if it's less than $10, I won't sweat it if it's a bad cigar. You start crossing the $12, $13 barrier, and I want to put a little bit more thought into it. I want to know that I'm going to have a good experience, and that's kind of what's kept me away from some of the Archetype cigars is, You know, some of them you can't get into for less than $15. And I'm like, man, I don't really want to roll the dice on something I may or may not like. This is my gateway into, they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
I want to try more of their line.
Because I hadn't really looked at the fact that this was made by Ventura Cigars. Because I've tried that. They make the Psycho 7 and the Project 805. And I've tried those and I've liked those. If I knew that you know, Archetype was another Ventura cigar, I may have tried it sooner. But yeah, this is damn good smoke. I mean, I smoked it till my knuckles got warm, so.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and coming to this cigar after another powerhouse, you know, I was like, man, I'm just going to get burnt out on spice. And the fact that this had so many flavors, it complemented the powerhouse. And that doesn't happen very often in the cigar world, because usually you have a powerhouse and you don't taste your next three cigars.
Yeah. So this one definitely stands up to the strength.
It was full, but there was so many other flavors going on at the same time that, and the fact that the draw was so smooth on it, it didn't smoke like a powerhouse. So I don't know, man. It was a strange passage indeed.
And with that, be sure and follow us on our website, CigarNerdPodcast.com. We're also on the ESO network, ESOPodcast.com. And I don't know if it's up yet or not, but you know, we were members of their you know, Dragon Con recording. So you can hear us drink pie and talk about Dragon Con experiences. Go check that out. You can download the show at... we're on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play Music. We're on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, at Cigar Nerd Pod. Be sure and get your Cigar Nerd shirts that you probably saw us wearing in a lot of our Dragon Con pictures at realmensmokecigars.com. And they make a whole lot of other nerdy smoking shirts. If you don't want to pick up one of ours, you know, go get you a Wolverine.
Or if you just want to wrap the brand and get something sports related.
Yeah, I mean, they have a little bit of everything. And, oh, that was another thing we didn't, speaking of Wolverine, there was a bunch of Greatest Showman cosplay this year, and I saw the Wolverine Greatest Showman mashup, which was kind of funny. You also get your energy drinks at StrikeForceEnergy.com, promo code CigarNerds, kick the can. And with that, remember, hashtag look up the shaft.
And watch Fatal Future.
And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.